Hi, you're with Truth News Radio Australia. On the 8th of November 2012, it is absolutely superb to be talking to you today. My name's Herewood Fenton. Truth News Radio Australia is a show that comes from the grassroots of Australian truth and activism. And we will be looking at a number of important stories in Australia and around the world today. Of course, the biggest event that's occurred in the last few days has been the re-election of Barack Obama. And I don't really have a lot to say about that. I think that one of the most, one of the things that really stands out the most in regard to the latest US election, and this is actually very similar to the situation in Australia, is the complete lack of any real differentiation between what the two parties and the two major candidates really stand for. Of course, there's a lot of pseudo differences. There's a lot of giving the appearance that the two parties are at loggerheads with each other. But you just look at their key policies and you look at the actual performance of Barack Obama as the president of the United States and compare that to the previous president. There are some things that stand out. Of course, the healthcare policies, one of the biggest ones. But you look at the overall agendas and they're just seamless. They really are continuous, especially the foreign policy ones, especially the US militarism. There is really no distinction at all there. And I've got here some recent stories here from Reuters. Having dispatched Romney, Obama faces Iran and Syria. Obama victory ensures continuity on broad foreign policy. Having defeated a Republican Mitt Romney at home, Barack Obama has no shortage of adversaries to grapple with abroad, including the governments of Iran, Syria, and possibly China. The Democratic president's re-election ensures continuity in U.S. foreign policy, but leaves open questions such as whether diplomacy can constrain Iran's nuclear program or whether Israel or the United States might resort to airstrikes. Now, for the people around the world, this, of course, is one of the most central and important aspects of what's going on in the US. To embark on another military campaign would have just overwhelming and devastating effects for economies around the world, for people around the world, and, of course, for people in countries that would be in the crosshairs of a US attack. But on a more general level, the atmosphere is one where it appears that the general population has been sort of herded into identifying with one or other of the major political parties, and there are key hot button issues that people get very worked up over. For example, gay marriage. Government health care versus private health care. And, of course, climate change policies. But if you actually look at what would be actually implemented under either party, you find it's generally pretty much the same. There's nuances. There's small differences that differentiate them. I mean, let's just take a quick look at private healthcare versus a publicly funded healthcare system. Well, the one that's being proposed, the one that's actually currently in force in the United States, is really a private healthcare system. It's just one where the general public has less choice in who they can choose and how they can fund their own privately funded healthcare system. So essentially it's a mandated insurance program where people have to contribute to a healthcare system. But whether it's government, whether it's private, the the overall system is the same. It's just that there's more government intervention in the system that Obama brought in. In Australia, the healthcare system we have, again, it's a type of insurance program, but it's one where it is actually a government-managed fund, and it's called Medicare. But essentially, it is an insurance fund. There's really no difference between that and an insurance fund, except by the way it's organized. In Australia, the Medicare system levies about 5% of your tax to go into this fund. And look, there are some good things about it. I wouldn't totally knock it out and say it's a terrible thing. The Medicare system does allow you to get rapid health care if you need it, but at public hospitals, of course. Now, there are a lot of situations where you cannot get immediate health care without paying for it, and that's actually changed quite a bit over the years. In Australia, we have a system called bulk billing, where doctors can put you on the Medicare system and you won't have to pay a cent. But over the years, less and less doctors and less clinics are using the bulk billing, which means when you go to the doctor, you still have to pay, but then you can get the money back later or a percentage of that money. Now, none of that really is the most significant thing to me. To me, the biggest problem with all of that, whether it's publicly funded, whether it's private funded, whether it's government-mandated private funding, the biggest problem we've got is the power, the monolithic structures that have been set up by the collusion of the government with the major healthcare providers to actually reduce your choice in terms of what sort of medicines and what sort of healthcare you can actually get. And this is the case regardless of what type of system we have. And this is what really needs to be addressed. And those who fear a socialized system of medicine really are trying to emphasize that this type of problem can only get worse the more power and the more control we give to these overarching systems. People need to have their own decision-making ability about how they deal with their healthcare. They need it for their personal health care, and they need it in terms of the way they take care of their children. And again, another trend we've seen is to restrict and roll back people's freedom to make those choices, and particularly their freedom to make those choices in the way they treat their children. We have legislation continually going through to try and limit and try to coerce what parents can do. I was looking at an article a couple of days ago, and I'll try and bring that up after the break, but it was talking about ADHD. And so there is legislation on the books in the US to try and bring parents into a situation where they may be forced to medicate their children for attention hyperactivity disorder if it's deemed by schools that their child is misbehaving to an extent, and a doctor could be brought in to say, well, your child has this illness and now you'll have to have this child medicated because that's what the state has said. Your child is going to school and we manage all that, and we will manage how your child basically is medicated. And of course, all that becomes so much easier and so much more streamlined with a completely government, completely socialized system. And of course, there was the case I brought up a few weeks ago, and this is by no means a standalone case, where children were taken away from their families simply because the doctor in a hospital didn't like some of the alternative and proactive treatments that the parents were using to take care of their children. And that doctor then reported the family to the government child protection authorities, and then a saga ensued for several years that did actually involve the children being removed from the home. And then the parents were forced a terrible, humiliating situation because the parents really had no other options. They exhausted all their options. They were forced to sign up to an agreement with the government to basically feed the children in a certain way, to provide certain medications, all determined by the government. And, you know, these were not uncaring parents. These were well-off parents, parents who cared about their kids passionately. They just had a different view. And so the overall trend is towards this corporatized system of the government and large corporations, whether they be your electricity company, and we'll be talking about that in the next hour, or whether it is your doctor in the pharmaceutical industry making decisions about how you spend your money and what you do with your time. So you're listening to Truth News Radio Australia. It is excellent talking to you today. And I do encourage you to call into our show if you're interested in participating in the discussions. I will be having as my guest in the second hour, Chris Emery, a filmmaker and a good friend of mine, who was a co-producer of the superb documentary A Noble Lie, which is currently filming around the US. And if you'd like to call in and talk to me or Chris in the next hour, you certainly can do so. The number is in the US, 512-646-1984. And in Australia, the number you can call in on is 1-300-153-372. And I'll be talking to Chris in the second hour about the work he's been doing, promoting the film, some of the speaking events he's had. I mean, it's really impressive. I mean, this film really is a cutting-edge film, and it really challenges the status quo. It challenges the powers that be. It challenges a lot of the assumptions that people make. And, you know, simply as a form of activism, a film like this is incredible in what it can achieve. So do stay with us for the second hour. Anyway, we're about to go to break, so you're with Truth News Radio Australia. Please stay with us, and we'll be right back after this short break. Getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free. Welcome back. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia. My name's Herewood Fenton, and it's a great pleasure to be doing this show, broadcasting out of Austin, Texas on the Logos Network. And of course, you can get our podcasts at truthnews.com.au. I've had a bit of a difficulty with the website over the past few weeks due to some glitches, and you may have had trouble accessing it, but that appears to be resolved now, and all the recent shows that we've done are up on the website as playable or downloadable podcasts. So if you'd like to drop into the website and leave a comment, we would be very pleased to hear from you. And if you would like to call into the show, please do. Apparently someone did try to call in the last segment, but we had a bit of a glitch again. Sorry about that. If you do try calling in again now, it should be fine. And I'll just give you those numbers again if you would like to call in. In Australia, you can call in on 1-300-153-372. And in the United States, you can call in on 512-646-1984. Some Australian news now. Higher power bills are flagged in an energy white paper. Consumers who use lots of power at peak times could soon be forced to pay more for electricity as part of the federal government's plan to cut energy consumption and create a fairer billing system. Now, this scheme to charge people more at peak times is intricately linked up with a system known as smart metering. And I've got some more information about smart metering and a website that I will bring your attention to in a moment. I'll just read to you a little more from the article and then I'll get more into my deep, profound concerns about the plans to basically affect how people can access energy at different times of day, and how smart metering basically intrudes into your privacy and freedom as an individual. The Energy Minister, Martin Ferguson, said there is no quick fix to counter the energy price rises of recent years, but he is challenging the states to introduce reforms which might ease some of the pain. Sounds very reasonable and good when these measures are introduced as reforms and they talk about easing some of the pain, doesn't it? But these types of reforms are actually reforms that roll back your freedom as an individual. That's what they call reforms these days. They're actually forms of power grabs by the federal authorities. Martin Ferguson releases today the government's long-awaited energy white paper, which calls for an overhaul of electricity pricing and for innovations to allow customers to better manage their energy use. Again, a beautifully sugar-coated and lollipop-packaged phraseology there. He says that demand-based pricing and smart meters will help overcome the problem of capacity, because he says here that pricing structures are resulting in inefficient peak demand. But smart meters will help overcome that problem. Mr. Ferguson says that many of the ideas included in the white paper will need the cooperation of the states. Now, I'll just get into some more of the information, and I may actually play to you a little clip here from that. We'll just kick that off. Okay, no, we are having a little problem with that. I won't be able to play you that audio. A little problem there with my sound card. Now, just moving on through this article about the proposed changes to energy. The white paper will say that electricity pricing needs to be overhauled to stop inefficient investment in infrastructure, which is only used during rare peak demand times. Smart meters, which are being rolled out in Victoria, may be part of that overhaul. Energy Networks Association Chief Executive Malcolm Brown says the technology allows customers to monitor prices so that they can adjust their electricity use accordingly. Ah, oh, look, the language here, the double speak, the weasel words are just unbelievable. The reality is, folks, that the smart meters they're not there to allow you to help monitor things. They're there to control what you can do. okay? And they will be putting the price up at different times, and they will be monitoring your usage and then changing the price you're charged. Okay, I'm going to actually refer now to a website called stopsmartmeters.com.au, and we're going to get into some of the detail about smart meters and the concerns about smart meters. What are they? And this is from stopsmartmeters.com.au, a really excellent website which I do encourage you to take a look at. What are they? Smart meters are electronic meters which have the capability of measuring electricity consumption in 30-minute intervals. Plus, they are able to periodically broadcast the collected data wirelessly via radio frequencies. Why are spinning dial meters and electronic non-wireless meters being replaced with smart meters? The remote reading of meters means that hundreds of meter readers will no longer be required, providing significant savings to the power distributors. They also give power distributors the ability to remotely disconnect and reconnect power at specific properties. Smart meters provide the means to charge different rates for electricity at different times. Now, it says here that this was already possible with the non-wireless interval meters. So I'm not quite sure what the key distinction there is. Now, some background to it. Currently, the smart meters are only being introduced in Victoria, and this was mandated in 2006. The Department of Treasury and Finance reviewed the program in 2011, and interested parties were given the opportunity to enter a submission to give their opinion on these new measures. The submissions from four of the power distributors were dated 3 days after the submissions were due, although the public wasn't given the same amount of leeway. Although the web page made it abundantly clear that submissions would become public documents, none of the 400 submissions from the public have been published to date. Now, what are the concerns about smart meters? Time of use pricing. This feature allows power distributors to shape customer demand by imposing higher prices when power distributors want to reduce load. This means power distributors will provide less infrastructure as they won't need to cater for high demand situations. As well as set time of use plans, it provides for future critical peak pricing. So that, for instance, on 24 hours notice, prices could escalate for a four-hour period. An indefinite moratorium was placed on time-of-use pricing in Victoria in March of 2010 after concerns raised by groups including the Consumer Utilities Advocacy and the Victoria Council of Social Services. The Brotherhood of St. Lawrence pointed out in their submission that many low-income and disadvantaged people have limited discretionary energy consumption and are therefore unable to switch off unwanted appliances. Questions have also been raised as to the actual effectiveness of time-of-use pricing. Time-of-use tariffs have had only very modest success in eliciting demand-side responses in trials both overseas and Australia. Well, it's hardly surprising, isn't it? I mean, people don't have the discretion generally to just say, well, I'm only going to use electricity at this time. I mean, people are living lives based on what they need to do, and they can't just become different people. They can't just completely reorganize their lives because the price goes up. Of course, if the price went up to a fantastic extent, or if they were punished in some other ways, I guess they would. But, you know, really what that is fascism. That is just total state and corporatist intervention in people's private lives. And of course, you know, the more painful and punishing you make the measures, the more likely it will be. We are going to break right now.
you reach all your selfish goals. Punchline after punchline, leaving us all, leaving us all.
Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. Look, I'm just going to continue reading from the article that I was reading to you there when we were cut off at the break. Talking about smart meters in Australia and proposed legislation that will come through on a federal level that will basically bring smart meters into a nationwide usage. And, of course, this is being sold to us as a reform, as an improvement, as a way to ease pressures, and all the language that's being used makes it sound really quite wonderful. But the reality of it is that this is actually a power grab. It is a corporatist, fascist move to put the average householder into a situation where the corporate government structure can just basically invade into your life and can punish you, manipulate your behavior, pressure you into using power at different times because they deem it to be appropriate. So just getting back into the time of use pricing. Time of use pricing has been rebadged as flexible pricing by the Department of Primary Industries. You see, the word flexible sounds good, doesn't it? Doesn't sound bad anymore, despite the fact that a moratorium had been placed on this and quite serious criticisms from organisations such as the Brotherhood of St Lawrence had been lodged. The government rebadges it, repackages it, and now calls it a flexible pricing system. Now, I'm going to move on to some of the more important concerns about the smart metering. Privacy concerns. It is reported that collected data revealing customer usage of electricity is to be on-sold for research purposes. This is of concern to many people as they believe this information should remain confidential. Other areas of concern center on questions regarding the vulnerability of radio frequencies carrying usage data to interception. DPI engaged Lockstep Consulting to undertake a privacy impact assessment last year. Lockstep's report largely sidestepped technical questions regarding the vulnerability of radio frequencies to interception, relying on the fact that all meter to electricity distributors' communications is encrypted. However, they did place considerable emphasis on perceived shortfalls regarding the use and disclosure and choices that customers will have to control secondary usage. Well, just let me put that into plain English for you. Your usage data is going to be intercepted and used and unsold. And, of course, that will be tied to personal information about who you are. Now, there is more concern here about cost blowouts. Smart meters, rather than being simple mechanical devices, rely on software which in turn is required to communicate wirelessly to complex back-end information IT systems. City Power, PowerCore's sister company, stated in 2009 that Victoria was to be a world trailblazer with respect to the IT component of the program. Already, the Australian Communication and Media Authority, ACMA, has considered shifting the smart meter communications used by some of these organisations to a different band due to overcrowding in the current segment and the likelihood that the smart meter communications will interfere with other users. Examples of other applications using these bands include movement detectors, video surveillance, and wireless loudspeakers. There are a number of reports of people experiencing problems because of interference due to smart meter communications. ACMA pointed out that it is possible that the level of interference caused by smart meters could become unacceptable. And if the move to a higher band is implemented, the change means that every meter deployed would require the internal radio to be retuned to a new frequency. And it is unclear whether this would involve a hardware or a software change. So these problems will involve costs. Now, of course, this is a lot of technical information, and I don't want to overload our listeners with too much of this detail, which you probably won't be able to absorb. But I recommend taking a look at stopsmartmeters.com.au. And I also recommend just thinking about this again, as I was saying before, just on the level of why it is that we need the government and big corporations to really kind of intrude into our personal lives on this level. One of the extensions of the use of smart meters goes even further than this, and this has been discussed over the years and has been trialed, is that individual appliances can be switched on and off so that if you decide, or the government decides for the greater good, that your air conditioner should not be able to work at certain periods of the day, your air conditioner will just be inoperable during that time. Or, you know, it might be your heater if it's in winter. It might be your fruit blender. It could be anything. And, you know, what they're proposing here is a way to streamline costs and a way to make everything better for everyone. And there are some good things about that, but this, again, comes down to this greater good argument, and this argument that we're going to forcefully make everyone conform to a certain standard in order to make it a little bit better for everyone. But guess what? What that really benefits is the big companies. It really benefits the big companies who are going to save on their costs. I mean, look, if I as a consumer want to use my electricity in any way, I should have the right to do that. But of course, the concerns about carbon dioxide emissions and climate change are again being used to say to me that I don't necessarily have that right, that the greater good here is at stake because we have to protect the environment of the planet, and so I, as an individual, may not have the right to use my air conditioner when I feel it, or use my heater when I feel the need for it in winter. So, again, the individual is being put into a kind of a vassal, feudalistic vassal overlord relationship. And yet, the overlords that we are reporting to, as we know from what is so clear from their practices, from what has been revealed about the ruthlessness of these organisations, is that they've got their own interests at heart. They've got their shareholders' interests at heart to some extent. But if we let them decide for us what is the greater good, they might just well decide to exterminate us at a certain point because they might decide that's for the greater good. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. I'm very pleased to be talking to you today, and do stay with us. We'll be right back after this short break. Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. Well, I've got some more Australian news to cover for you today, but again, like most of what we cover, These topics really have broad reference to many, many similar things that are going on in different countries. And I want to bring to you some new information about the brutal tasering death of Roberto Lodizio, who, of course, was tasered to death by a gang of police earlier this year. A 21-year-old man was tasered multiple times by police, died on the pavement outside a coffee shop in downtown Sydney just after 6 a.m. on March the 18th. Now, Mr. Lodizio was under the influence of a drug at the time, and his behaviour was a little bizarre, but he was obviously experiencing a medical problem, and he needed to go to hospital. He needed to be taken care of. But instead, what happened was after an incident in a 7-Eleven where he grabbed a packet of biscuits, the police were called and a chase ensued, and the topless man, Robert Lodizio, didn't have a shirt on. He was running down the street, and a gang of police were chasing him. And some witnesses have come forward to the actual tasering event. There has been an inquiry into this, and I should point out that the only reason there's been an inquiry is because Mr. Lodizio comes from a very wealthy family in Brazil, and they applied a lot of pressure to the media. And again, this is one of the most, you know, disgusting and offensive things about our country, about our laws, and about our media, is that if you've got money and you've got influence, you can get a little bit more attention, and you've got more chance of getting justice. You know, these types of tasering deaths are occurring frequently, and not always deaths, but often quite severe taserings, which have unknown long-term effects, and, you know, as well as just the insult and indignity to people, because they're often done with no real justification. But in this case, we know about it because the man comes from a wealthy family. Anyway, an eyewitness to the tasering says that he thought police behaved like a mob of gangsters during the arrest. Tommy Wang heard shouting and zapping sounds and saw 6 to 7 police chasing a topless man with his jeans falling down and then setting upon him in a brutal way. Mr. Wang has told ABC Radio's National's background briefing that it was clear that Mr. Curti was on the ground already and surrounded by the police, and that he thought the police didn't even look like police. "It's just my opinion, but I think they look like a gangster mob trying to take down a young guy." He says he was too scared to intervene in the arrest. Mr. Wang says police only followed up his first witness statement after he gave an interview to the Sydney Morning Herald the following day about what he saw. Detectives contacted the Herald and obtained Mr. Wang's mobile number, and when he told them he had already given his contact details to police, they were surprised, he said. "They had my contacts and everything, and it wasn't until the media got onto it that a whole bunch of different detectives contacted me." And again, you know, this illustrates this this kind of two-tier system we have, whereas, you know, if you're someone significant, if you're someone that the media pays attention to, like, you know, you come from a rich family, oh, suddenly it becomes a media story. Suddenly, because it's a media story, a different division of the police will get onto the case. I mean, it's so corrupt. It's so obviously transparently corrupt. That's the system that we have. New South Wales police have declined to comment. Mr. Curti's death was the subject of a coronial inquest in Sydney last month. And there is a radio interview which you can get access to on the website here at abc.net.au. And I'm going to try actually to play a little bit of it. I have been having trouble with my audio system. I'm going to try to play a little bit of that interview for you right now.
Are you there?
Hello, it's the police. Can I help you?
There's a robbery at a city convenience store.
The sequence of events, which ultimately led to the death of Roberto Laudisio Curti, began with a 000 call from a street cleaner who witnessed a shirtless man jump across the counter of a convenience store in Sydney's CBD.
It's near 75 King Street, two doors from 75 King Street, and it's between George and York. I saw the guys just jumping the cage.
Between the 000 call and his death 45 minutes later, Roberto Laudisio Curti would be tasered 14 times. Much of it while handcuffed and lying face down on a city pavement. Three cans of capsicum spray would be used on him, and at one stage, up to 10 police surrounded him as he lay on the ground. Taser cam footage showed part of this desperate struggle. In this excerpt, an officer can be heard yelling, "Taser, taser, stop resisting or you'll be tasered again."
Taser, taser! Stop resisting or you will be tasered again!
As a death in police custody, Roberto Laudisio Curti became a matter for the coroner. Last month, Coroner Mary Jerram heard from 30 witnesses, including police, medical experts, an independent expert on taser use and police force, and a statement from the family. Police said their use of the weapon was reasonable and consistent with their training, but the counsel assisting the coroner, Jeremy Gormley SC, said the police use of tasers was unreasonable, excessive, and at one stage he said it was an act of thuggery. One of the witnesses, Tommy Wang, had just got home from a night out when he saw the desperate struggle between police and Roberto on the footpath. He was horrified by what he saw.
I think no one could have interrupted the police because the amount of force and the amount of violence and the amount of sound was too loud, too messy, too violent, that you cannot interrupt. So I think we're all scared and watching. Like, we don't want to mess up with the police in the future. Don't want to get treated like that. So
the coroner refused to release one of the sequences of taser cam footage. Mary Jerram said it was not in the public interest because on it, Roberto could be heard crying out as he's repeatedly tasered in drive stun mode, which is when the taser is applied directly to the skin. It's part of a sequence where he was drive-stunned seven times in just 1 minute and 20 seconds. And according to the police taser log, the combined duration of the electric shock is 51 seconds. Two of the officers were tasering Roberto simultaneously, although neither said they were aware of what the other one was doing. Roberto's uncle Domingos came out of the court after watching the footage, barely able to speak.
After he handcuffed, he has tasered him for five times, and a few occasions, 14 seconds, 8 seconds, 7 seconds, I don't remember the others, but long duration. Huge amount of pain because it was consecutive five shots. You've heard yourself. That's tough, believe me. Before dying, it's a lot. That's brutal, brutal.
The autopsy did not identify a cause of death. Some of the medical experts ruled out tasers and capsicum spray as a cause of death, although they thought they could have contributed to a heart attack. A toxicologist ruled out LSD as a cause of death. One expert said Roberto had died from positional asphyxia, that is, suffocation and heart attack, induced by lying face down in a dangerous position after his struggle with police. But another expert disagreed with that. While the coroner is yet to hand down her findings, 2 days after the inquest finished, New South Wales Police Minister Mike Gallagher was standing by the police use of tasers.
There can be no doubt, and I see it myself as I travel around the state talking to police officers, that they do see the presence of a taser as a de-escalator in terms of violent confrontation, and for many of those situations, there is a rapid de-escalation without the taser even being removed from the holster.
Hello, I'm Wendy Carlisle.
Okay, I'll just leave it there. Now, I don't know how that makes you feel. I really find it hard to take. I find it hard to listen to that. I actually find it really quite distressing. The man was clearly tortured to death. I mean, he was held down on the ground. He was electroshocked for a 51-second, you know, consecutive period. And he may have been asphyxiated as well. And the police have the audacity to say that this is a de-escalator. Well, you know, when the Nazis overran Europe and were rounding people up and slaughtering them, that was a de-escalator of violence too. Because, you know, if you think you're going to be slaughtered, if you think you're going to be put up against a wall and shot, it will actually tend to hold you back. It's just pure fear. The police are only referring to pure fear when they talk about a de-escalation. And we are about to go to break. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. We'll be right back after this break with Chris Emery in the second hour, and he will be talking about his film work, some really interesting stuff to discuss there. So please stay with us. And if you'd like to comment on anything I've said in this show, please leave some comments on our website or call in using our dial-in numbers. And of course, you can find those on the website if you click on the listen links. We'll be right back after this break.